to EG's Dealmaker of the Month with me, Jim Larkin. Now, the premise is simple. We track down the leading individual dealmaker for the preceding month on the Radius Under My Rankings, and we find out how they did it. And February's Dealmaker of the Month is John Proctor, who is joint founder and director of East Midlands agency FHP. John is an industrial specialist, and the Radius rankings show that in February he disposed of 116,000 square feet of space, which is more than anyone else in the UK. Now, the East Midlands industrial market is a really good barometer of the wider industrial sector, as its location and connectivity make it ideally suited to the logistics sector, which has dominated the market over recent years. And it's easy to assume, as I do here, in fact, that logistics is still behind every deal. But is that boom now over? And if so, where has industrial interest switched to? And what's the outlook like for a 2024 where uncertainty is about the only thing we can be certain about? Well, it turns out John is the ideal man to ask. John, hello, how are you?
All good, thank you. Nice to see you.
Good stuff. Okay. Now, what is the current sentiment like in the East Midlands industrial sector? Because given how crazy the logistics market went a couple of years back, I think most would have expected activity levels to drop off a fair bit. But I guess your figures are proof that things haven't ground to a halt.
No, the market's certainly not ground to a halt, but it has become more hesitant in certain areas. And I think every occupier, whatever place and standing they are, from the smallest occupier to the largest occupier, wants to make sure they're making the right decision. We certainly saw greater hesitation following the, trust economics or the disaster of Liz Trust or whatever you want
to
say.
Yeah, that's probably a polite way of putting it.
Yeah, but, and also, of course, what's happened and we're witnessing in Ukraine and the Middle East has certainly created greater hesitancy in the money markets and the capital markets, which influence directly the supply of space in our sector, have been affected as well. So to say our market is not affected would be naive and inappropriate, but pleasingly, some of the hesitation we saw on the market seems to have been released since the new year. And I think I'm speaking for agents across the country, because I was down with the Panattoni boys in London and the London agents last week, and they're experiencing a similar sort of thing. But we're seeing good activity in the indigenous markets, smaller and medium sized units, anything up to 50,000 square feet. We're seeing good activity, and we're, the majority of units on the market within our patch in that size range are generating demand, and many of which are either going under offer or have gone under offer. Between 50,000 and 100,000 square feet, we're still seeing demand, and the units that are available have got interest. There's a couple of schemes where they built a few too many too quickly out the spec program, where they've got a bit of hesitancy, but otherwise we're seeing movement. Where we are, if I'm brutally honest, and if we're all honest, seeing more hesitation than we would like is in the size range, probably 100,000 square feet to 350,000 square feet, which did through the crazy days, if you want to say, but they weren't crazy, but whereby we saw the funding being introduced regularly on a speculative basis, we saw units being built. So we probably have a few too many units, if we're honest, in the size range, 100 to 350,000 square feet empty rather than full, and we are chasing the market a little bit in that area, but equally we're hoping that the stimulus in the smaller end, where the boardroom is more fleet of foot and quicker to make decisions, is a demonstration that the market confidence is there, and the supply and demand dynamics are still not such that we've got a huge amount of stock in the market. So I think we're all cautiously optimistic, but we are watching that space.
Okay. And the East Midlands itself has always been a kind of a powerhouse for industrial. Do you put that down purely to location, or are there broader factors?
The East Midlands is traditionally, in terms of logistics terms, has been focused on further south, Northampton, Daventry. But what we found is that now, from a distribution space, that the junction 24 to 28 locations on the M1 pushing up to the South Yorkshire markets have become very busy as well. It's the heart of the country. You can hit the UK within the majority of the England within 2 hours, the majority of the UK within 4 hours. It's well connected. Labour rates generally are lower than national. and it's the right place from an efficiency point of view. You've got traditional industries which in our part of the world also continue to fuel a good part of demand, and we've now seen the Golden Triangle gravitate north into the northern part of the East Midlands, which is where we've been based. So those factors have helped keep us going.
Sure, excellent. Okay, right, let's drill down into some of the deals you've done. Your biggest one was at Oak Spinney Park, which a lot of people will have driven past without realising it. It's on just by the M1 on the outskirts of Leicester. What can you tell us about the scheme itself there?
Well, that's actually a space which was built by Samworths. Samworths are, as you probably know, one of the largest providers of cooked food for in terms of they own the likes of Ginkster, they own a number of other products, and they supply the malt loaf people, Saurine, and plenty of other brands when you look on their website. And they've always been historically based in that neck of the woods, and they built two units on Oak Spinney. They still occupy one next door, Salad Works, but this one basically became surplus to requirements, and we let it to Bakkavor and 5 years ago, but they had a break clause, and they triggered that. This building was a specific food facility, so it's a little bit different. But Noble Foods are in the food space, in the right place, in the right at the right time, and we did an off market deal, which was great. So without putting a board up, we managed to do a deal which suited an occupier.
Sure. Okay. Now, Noble Foods, they're the company behind the Happy Egg Co., aren't they? So I guess they're kind of using that unit for egg distribution, I suppose. I mean, but did that mean there were kind of special requirements, given that eggs are famously quite breakable, and I presume they have to be stored at a certain temperature?
It's actually a cooked process, so they're actually using eggs and they're producing products from that. So it's actually a facility which has cooking, has other processes in there. So it will be producing. I don't know exactly what, and I suspect I'd be breaching intellectual property rights and getting into trouble if I said so. But they will be using it as a production facility for part of their products, because whilst they're in eggs, they're also in a wider space within the food. Within the food supply chain.
I see. So it's kind of manufacturing rather than logistics.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And where had they moved from?
Good question. I don't know. I don't know, actually. I know it's modernization of and bringing together a number of their facilities into a new facility. So it wasn't actually specific to the East Midlands. It was more the availability of a unit which could do that functionality for them. So I don't exactly know which facilities they brought together into here. So.
Fair enough. Okay. And also the rental figure we've got on Radius equates to just over £6 per square foot. I mean, is that fairly typical for that sort of unit?
I mean, it is a unit which is it'll be 20 years old, and it is a specific unit. And it's lower than a distribution unit, but equally it's got some element of fit out. If we were letting that size of unit in a modern unit with higher eaves and larger yard, we'd be certainly looking to be getting over £8 a square foot. This figure is slightly distorted also by the fact that there is quite a high, about 9,000 square feet of relatively temporary offices there as well. So you could argue it's closer to £7 per square foot. But for the age and nature of the building, it's about right. But to actually underwrite the letting prior to a unit becoming empty was absolutely bang on for both the occupier and also Samworth, because it underwrote the risk. So all in all, it was the right deal.
Good stuff. OK, now you also sold a 37,500 square feet unit at Mill Hill Industrial Estate in Enderby, which is just on the other side of the M1. What can you tell us about that one?
Well, there we were acting for Wesleyan Assurance Society, and they'd owned that unit since 1975. So it was actually nine smaller industrial units, seven of which they owned freehold, and two of which they'd sold on freehold basis actually, and then the remainder was the last one was a long leasehold basis. So it was a small investment, a collection of smaller units which were income producing, 1970s unit, and it was sold to local investors from Leicester.
Sure, good stuff. Okay. And in addition to February's deals, it's probably worth mentioning that your 2024 started with a bit of a bang in the shape of a 280,000 square foot letting at the East Midlands Distribution Centre up in Castle Donington. Can you say a bit about that in terms of who the tenant is and what they're using it for?
Yeah, it's Medique. It has been used as a distribution unit. Medique are part of the Bunzl, and it's a distribution facility. It's we were delighted with that deal because of the reasons we said earlier on, with the hesitancy within the market to be able to let a unit within that size range where we are seeing a little bit of hesitancy was great news and well received by the market generally. But it's just a regional distribution centre.
Sure, good stuff. Okay. You mentioned the kind of investment side of things there. I mean, how is industrial performing as a investment?
It's performing. Class? I mean, it's performing well as a class because basically it's robust in terms of its supply and demand take up, albeit we've got the hesitancy we talked about. The investors' demands for yield have moved. So in terms of how the actual sector is functioning fine, but in terms of how the investors can invest in that sector, the cost of debt and the influences on the money markets has meant we've got some more scratching of our heads to do in terms of trying to get the financial appraisals to work, because the yield profile 24 months ago had dropped down into prime yields of something reported right down in the south of England. But in our part of the world, we were seeing even people thinking about going beneath 4% net initial yield in certain instances. And that was new territory for us. There's been far more realism back into the market as a factor of the increase of cost of debt and the cost of money generally. So we've seen an easing basically the activity levels and the ability for investors to invest in that level. So the investors piece has become a little bit more difficult, but in terms of how the market itself is functioning, yeah, we've got a little bit of easing in take up, but generally we're seeing rents still showing signs of growth. We're not seeing an erosion to rental value. So as an asset class, ignoring the interface of the capital markets, it's still performing well.
Sure. Okay. I mean, are sellers generally sensible in their pricing, realizing that the days of 4% yields are gone, or
they know the yield is gone. The problem is, at the moment, why would you sell? The prognosis at the moment is an easing in interest rates and hopefully some greater confidence in the markets. So the majority of people, unless they're forced to sell, will not be selling at the moment, because you would like to think that there is some strengthening in the tone of yields to occur later in the year. We won't be going back to the raging yields of 24 months ago, but there will certainly be some improvements in the yield profile without a shadow of a doubt, is the general prognosis, ignoring unfortunately global events which could derail us, which, touch wood, let's hope it doesn't come to be.
Sure. Okay. I mean, given global events and all the kind of political and economic uncertainty we've got domestically, how optimistic are you about the year ahead, just general, not just for investments but for the industrial sector generally?
We've started more briskly than I was expecting after last year. So the smaller to medium sized markets are performing very well in occupational terms. So the starting point of the market is how many occupiers are taking units. That without that, we have no market. And in that sector, we're seeing very good turnover. We are hopeful. Again, it's probably not the same analogy, but if you look at the way in which markets perform and how the consumers react, we're hopeful. If you look at both that sector of the market and you also look at the housing market, which went into a state of a paralysis in certain parts of the world at the back end of last year, we're seeing activity levels there again. So we're seeing consumer spend increasing. Our economy, whether we like it or not, is linked directly into consumer spend. We're hoping that will knock through into the mid-range, well, semi-range. It's the big units, 100 to 350,000 square feet. And actually, you're seeing some of the larger distributors looking for units of 400, 500, 600,000 square feet, and those inquirers are actually chasing sites and not finding a home. So all in all, it's just that mid range when you're looking across the whole markets, which we're seeing a little bit of hesitancy. But the general drivers and overall feeling, it seems to be indicating, touch wood, that we're not in a pickle. We just need it to knock through into that mid range.
Okay. And within the area, what's the development pipeline looking like? I mean, you mentioned you probably don't need much more in the way of massive logistics unit, but are there enough smaller units coming along?
No, not at all. We're an undersupply in the small to medium size, which is why the market's moving so well. Even in the mid-range where we are seeing the hesitancy, 100 to 350,000 square feet, we're not in total oversupply. We just have a few more units than we'd like, which are available at the moment. So in overall terms, much has been said about the shortage of housing market for the medium to long term. We've actually got a shortage of provision of good quality sites, which can produce both buildings for and developments for the indigenous market, down to the guys who produce widgets. And that area of the market is sometimes forgotten totally. And there's undoubtedly an area there which planners ought to address in qualitative terms as opposed to quantitative terms when they're allocating sites. But we do have a shortage of land to match the 5-10 year requirements of the market.
Okay. I mean, what's the cause of that? Is it just a physical shortage of land, or is it that planners are reluctant to approve industrial usage?
No, I mean, the local plan process is basically a cumbersome process, and it's linked into 10, 11 year windows in terms of planning. But then, and it's always behind the curve in terms of its analysis of the market. They've patched it up in the housing sector of the market and done a number of special, whatever they call them, special measures and supplementary plans, and actually sought to sort of break the curve. And increasingly within the commercial side of it, developers are trying to do exactly the same. But the planners have not reacted, and also they still judge availability of land on quantitative terms. And so you'll go to any area and you can find secondary sites which are allocated, which will not basically fit the bill and actually fit the needs of the market. But the planners will be saying, well, there's still X number of supply in the system, and that we need a qualitative approach bringing in, and we need recognition that this space is equally important to the economy as housing is.
Okay. How big an issue is ESG in terms of, the way landlords are building new builds, and in terms of, what tenants are asking for?
Well, it's not just landlords and tenants. I was with our corporate relationship manager from NatWest today, and ESG is top of their agenda. So if anybody wants to buy a building, then they go and get finance, unless they can prove that it will meet the need, it will satisfy the statutory needs of energy performance criteria, then they will not lend. And in particular, in the older buildings, this is becoming more and more important in terms of how people can trade in the market, because unless you're a cash buyer, unless you can prove definitively that your building will be able to meet with the minimum energy standards, then increasingly you will not get finance to buy that property. But in terms of the new build side of it, and in terms of the larger landlords managing their stock, ESG is very high on the agenda. And equally from tenants' perspective, it is now becoming recognised as more than an area where they need to pay lip service to it. And we're actually, so from the landlord's point of view, undoubtedly, we're benchmarking all properties in terms of their energy criteria and what the minimum standards need to be. Certain landlords have been far more active in investing earlier in it, and actually improving the ESG credentials now. And certain people are actually exiting properties where they see problems. And they're still at the moment able to exit, and there'll be cash buyers out there who'll buy it who haven't quite realised that the ESG agenda is catching up with us now, quite rightfully so. So we're very alive to it. Our clients are very alive to it. Another area which probably illustrates the point is that we're actually now looking to put together packages where you can pay a rental for the provision of, for instance, solar. So whereas previously it'd be nice to have it, and yeah, there's a bit of solar, which is a token gesture to get a tick in the box. People are now actually looking at it properly and analysing it properly, both landlords and tenants, and tenants are prepared to actually monetize that in terms of paying rent against savings that they would get. So it's you know, we've gone from just thinking it's that little bit of a coloured bar which is on the fridges and the rest of it that we'd take no notice of, to actually realising, yeah, we need to take this seriously, and we all should take it seriously.
Yeah, so you kind of, yeah, it's not something you can ignore anymore, is it? You kind of have
not
to.
Not at all, and we shouldn't. And then also, you can actually demonstrate the business cases now as well, which helps.
Sure, definitely. Okay. Now, we kind of hear a lot about how in the office sector, COVID forced operators to really kind of up the quality of the workspace. Did anything vaguely comparable happen in the industrial sector? I mean, I know it's different because, you know, office work can more or less be done from home to a much greater extent than the industrial sector. But, you know, did they have to kind of tempt people back?
Not really. No, I think the COVID has changed all parts of the property market in differing ways. The office market is going through a state of transformation, as we all know, and it's regularly publicised within the logistics and industrial space. I think the workplace has just been improved anyway. I think health has probably had a bearing on that, and COVID has a bearing on all of us in terms of air movements, in terms of how we sit next to each other. I mean, you know, you just sit with people now and we're all far more conscious of if we do have to cough, exactly, making sure that we're a bit better behaved as to how we cough and all the rest of it. So we've all learned through it, but employers within the logistics space have undoubtedly improved the quality of the environment within and the industrial space, the quality of the environment within which their staff work. I think there is a recognition you need to provide far more for staff. We're seeing people provide exercise facilities with properties. We're seeing developers integrate exercise into the business, into the industrial parks that they're building. We're seeing facilities for bikes being top of the agenda. We're seeing showers being built in, not just from a work perspective, and that's within the industrial and the logistics perspective. And I don't think that's been purely driven by COVID at all. I think it's just a recognition that we all should be, and again, it's linked to the ESG piece as well, in terms of encouraging people to be more active, better well-being. I think the whole piece is there. Has COVID directly influenced the industrial and logistics space? To a degree, yes. And certainly the offices of, you know, in certain areas are probably less populated, albeit they're linked to the production process or they're linked to the supply chain process. So we're not going into industrial logistics buildings and seeing empty swathes of space in the same way as we do within the office sector.
Okay. And also, we've just had a budget which was met with, I guess, a slightly underwhelmed response generally. But what would you like to see the government do that would really help out the kind of CRE market in the East Midlands?
I think I don't know whether I can answer that one. I don't think there's any short answer to that. I think it's just they can certainly have a look at certain areas as to where a VAT is applied. I think they've obviously addressed national insurance, which helps employers. The corporation tax again is an interesting piece, but again, how they're not going to be able to do it. I think they've got very little areas that they can run to, really. I think that by free, what they could do mostly is actually going back to the planning process and the deliverability of sites and the strategic planning, investing, I think, within the public sector, but giving the planning authority the resources and making sure that planning authorities have those resources. Controversial statement, I know, but it would help if they were all back to work more regularly, because, you know, the amount of disconnect we get through the planning process and consultation and the delays that we see within the planning system are undoubtedly holding back our industry.
Okay, and just finally then, I mean, you're obviously a Radius user and very good as a company at getting deals in nice and quickly. How do you find using it, and what benefits do you see?
We use it actually, to be fair, to monitor the market, take up rates. It's not always 100% accurate, but no database will be. But, genuinely, what we find, to be fair, with working with your product is that we can download information and we can access information in a manner which we can interpret easily in line with the sort of software packages we use. So fair play to you. We find your product easy to use.
Good stuff. Excellent. Okay. Well, on that happy note, I think we'll bring things to a close. John, thanks ever so much for your time. That was really interesting.
It's my pleasure.